Hello, my name is Hamlet Dobbins, and this is Memphis Material, an oral history project chronicling the stories of the visual arts in Memphis, Tennessee. Memphis Material is a podcast celebrating the personal histories, the intimate stories, and the studio practices of some of the people who help shape the creative landscape of our city. These unedited interviews are all recorded at the Memphis Listening Lab in the Crosstown Concourse. The website is designed by the wonderful Brian Dixon. This interview today is the second of two interviews that I've done with Maritza Davila. The first one was done in the middle of 2022, and then the second one was done much later, on March 1st, 2025. Enjoy the interview. This morning, I was listening to the interview that you and I did a million years ago, and we sort of paused when we were talking about teaching, and we paused when we were talking about you being there at Memphis College of Art. We talked a little bit about some of the teachers who were there, and then I think we also talked about how you'd been there for several years, and then they did a national search because of NASAD, and then you got the job, and so you sort of stayed there. One of the questions that I had in terms of thinking about that, when I think of Memphis College of Art and other big art schools like that, or rather art schools with a diverse teaching group, one of the things I think about is how some teachers will perform certain roles. Like teachers will have like a particular skill set or a particular thing that they really care about that they bring to the table that other teachers don't. And so I'm curious, when you think about your time there at MCA, what do you think? What are some skill sets that you feel like you brought to the table that others did not?
Oh, I think I brought the... I started a diversity trend, and I was the only Hispanic. Mm-hmm. And so I brought my own experience as a Puerto Rican woman. When I got there, I was the second woman and the only one of color and the only one Latina. That pretty much remained the same way. Then we have another African Americans, including a dean, you know, Alonso Davis, who passed away last month. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we have more women. We had Cafiero, Haley Morris Cafiero, coming in for photography. And then after that, we have Jennifer Sargent coming in for surface design. We have several other women, so it became a little more balanced. But still, I was one of two person of color teaching there. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to say I brought my Latina, being a Puerto Rican woman of color, biracial, mm-hmm. into the mix.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm with you on all of that. I'm curious, what do you think? Like, I mean, for me, the thing that's really great about you is that you're still teaching and that you still are, I think, keenly aware of the things that you bring to the classroom that others do not. I know for sure one of those is your perspective. Obviously, as a woman of color, that's a perspective. But I'm curious also, what do you think about the way that you teach, the style that you teach, your approach to teaching? How do you feel like that fit in with some of the other teachers there at MCA?
I cannot speak to that, except that, because I haven't been in that many classrooms, you know, if any. I think I was, when I was the chair, I was supposed to cover some of the classes of new faculty, mm-hmm. coming in, mm-hmm. you know. But personally, at this point, sometimes in the 90s, I felt really comfortable about really being myself. But that's the same thing I noticed from any other faculty. Mm. you know, they felt very comfortable, they felt very committed to what the students needed to learn. Personally, I felt very committed on health issues, you know, in terms of changing the nature of printmaking from one that it was highly toxic to one in which it was really low toxic. And I'm still teaching, giving that preference to low toxic, to non-toxic kind of material. Mm-hmm. And so that's something I brought very early on when they asked me to teach screen printing, which back then it was heavy on solvent-based cleaning material in all aspects, from preparing the screen to cleaning and all that stuff. And I told Vida Reed, he said, the only way I can teach that course is that if you send me to Milwaukee to a course, newly started course on water-based screen printing. After that, I went to Canada to an intaglio course with low toxic materials. So I started researching on my own and going to these places in which I knew I can get information I could not get here in the United States if I could not find it here. So with that interest, I went to Canada, I went to Scotland, I went to Spain, specifically with people who have established ways of doing printmaking in the low toxic way. I want to be sure that my students were not affected in a way many of my fellow artists and even myself got affected for so many years of using highly toxic materials.
That sounds good. Now, I'm also really curious. I mean, I think one of the things for sure that I'm aware of is, like, when I teach, I'm at University of Memphis, and we have a lot of different teachers, and a lot of those teachers do things sort of in different ways. And then I'm kind of like you, where just recently I've felt like I've started to really be myself in the classroom. And so when you said that about yourself in the 1990s, I'm curious, what was it you were thinking about when you said that?
I'm thinking about the expectations. The expectations that you think other people have. Because when it comes down, the reality is that only you think that way. You know, like many students think about art and making art as a particular way because they think that's the way it's expected of them. And then I start in question them, where's that come from? You know, why do you think it's that way? Is that really coming from informed experience, or it comes because that's the way you think it's supposed to be? You know, like they're supposed to do art like their teachers, because in that way they get a better grade, because the teachers have to like what you do, you know. And so as a teacher, I started thinking, why do I have to be stiff and very narrow in the way I teach? Is it because that's the way I like to teach, or because that's the way I think teachers supposed to be? And that came from feeling tense while I was teaching, or feeling stress. Then I realized students are going to accept what I'm teaching or not. You know, not necessarily because I teach a certain way, but because I feel comfortable about it, and therefore I give them the confidence to trust the way I teach. You know, and so when it became more relaxed about teaching because I knew the material. I guess it's this imposter syndrome that sometimes we fall into, you know, in second guessing what you teach. And then once that falls, then you say, I can be just be myself. Mm-hmm. So I found myself being very straightforward with the students, having fun teaching instead of being stressed out. Having fun teaching, having able to make jokes and dance during class and put music and stop the class and say, okay, guys, let's start moving. Let's start relaxing. Let's start, you know, doing this and that. And seeing that the students were enjoying more the class because I was more, less stressed and less, more flexible. You know, and it also comes with age. There's no way that age, time for me is a magical word because time is where things happen. And the more that you respect time, the more do you learn because of time. And the more observance you have of the importance of it, the more relaxed you become. And so I felt that I was judging myself too harshly. I was taking the judgment of students, especially on those godforsaken evaluations, because they truly do not give you the information you need. Mm. They give you grievances. And those grievances come from a particular, expectation that was not real, or personalities and stuff like that. And I decided students are gonna come to the conclusions they're gonna come. Mm-hmm. If you bend over too much, they're going to become more judgmental because they might feel that you are more vulnerable to it. You know, I would just stop putting that away. Mm. You know, and for me, turning 50, turning 40, turning 50, turning 60, turning 70, and then you go over and say, who cares? You know, about that, you are who you are. And as long as you're honest with yourself and honest with your students, as long as you see what the students needs are, not yours, but the student needs overall, who they are, and get to see them for who they are and meet them to the place they are. I think that's a very important thing. You know, meeting on the place they are, that's where the students is starting, you're starting to see what they need in that particular time and moment, rather than what you want them to do. That's when you start seeing changes. And when you get rid of the academic expectations that art should look a certain way to be art, then that's you starting to recognize the creativity and perhaps genius that they have upon themselves that they do not yet see. Mm-hmm. Because perhaps other people have judged them in a standard that wasn't real to them. It's when you're starting to enjoy the teaching. It's hard because every single student is at his own, doing their own journey and their own thing. And so being able to be flexible enough to meet those demands, and I'm thinking about how many students, how the students are changing through the decades, how students have become very self-sufficient to becoming demanding in terms of give me that thing that I need to be sufficient. Mm. I make you responsible instead of me. Give me, show me, tell me. They're giving the power away. Mm. Every time they do that, they give the power enough. They do not recognize how powerful on their own they are, because especially on these times, that power has been taken away. Mm. I have never seen so many mental issues that I see now. How the mind is narrowing up instead of opening up. Mm. I don't know if that you experience. Mm.
You know, it's so interesting. I mean, I think that thing that you're talking about is a really common one. I mean, I don't think it's just in college. I don't think it's just at the University of Memphis. I mean, it is a cultural thing across the United States in terms of thinking about young people. And part of it is that we're able to recognize it a little bit more, of course. And then, you know, part of it is that the system isn't ready for it, you know. So, like, I remember when one of my children needed a therapist, we were given like a 10th generation Xerox sheet, and it had like 25 different therapists on it, and they were all full, all just totally packed. None of them were taking new patients, and it was just impossible to find somebody. And so there's like, I'm totally with you. And I think that it's not just like, oh, these kids these days, they've got problems. I think it's the world. And then I think it's also a trillion other little factors that kind of go in there. To me, I mean, I feel really glad that we're at a place in society where we can talk about those things. I mean, because, you know, for me, art school, the art was really the therapy. I mean, I can only imagine what my life would be like if I had started talk therapy when I was in college, you know. But now thinking about that, I mean, to me, when you talk about the self-reliance and the resilience, I mean, to me, all of that totally rhymes with your life as a kid and then your education later, both in Puerto Rico and then in New York City. I mean, to me, all of that feels really powerful as well in terms of your needing to go in there and do it, and your needing to go in there and be self-sufficient, and then also to be able to count on yourself with help from others. I mean, to me, all that feels really good. One thing I'm curious about too, staying with you at MCA, you were there for a long time. You were there from, what'd you say, 77 until?
No, 82, 36 years.
Okay, so you were there from 82 until it closed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, until a year or two before they close. Mm-hmm. I taught my two final courses were on drawing one and drawing two. Printmaking has already closed. Mm. At that point, the college was, the goal was to graduating those students who were already on the road to graduate within the time that the college was about to close. Mm-hmm. And I think that was amazingly generous, because what we found is that the students wanted to stay. Mm. They really wanted to graduate from the college. You know, the experience of being on the college was unique in terms of how we got to know the students, even if they did not take a class with me. You know, with us, we meet them in the hallway, we meet them on the parties, we meet them on the meetings, and so whether they took a class with me or not, I got to know them. Because, I mean, we meet them on the finals, on the review committees. Wow, how many students I met through review committees that later on took my class because they met us at the review committees. And for me, that was exceptional. Mm-hmm. And so that was, that many experience, you know, I had those experiences while I was teaching there. Yeah.
And in that time, I would imagine, obviously, that you would see the institution change over the course of time. I'm curious, when you think about your time at MCA, I mean, obviously, you know, like you were saying with the students and the evaluations, like, of course, we remember the ones that were negative despite the millions of ones that were saying, like, Maritza is awesome. And so I'm curious, what do you think, like, when MCA was really rolling and really doing well, what do you think it was? What were you guys doing right? What was feeling good about that?
Well, I think it's what it was already there from the beginning, mm-hmm. you know, and it's the ratio between students and staff and teachers, mm-hmm. professors. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It was always good. It got to be strenuous when then the powers to be decided that we have to have 500, 700 students in a physical plant that only could accommodate maybe no more than 400 or 500. You know, that's where the disconnect started. Mm-hmm. And that they started, the buyout started mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. buildings here and buildings there and buildings everywhere. Mm. You know, I don't even complain the graduate school because I think that was a very interesting move if they can keep it, if they could keep it modest and in very realistic way. When you hear people on the top of the college talking about we want to buy this building and this one and this one, and then I have people asking me, how's your college doing? You say, amazingly well, and something on the back of my head was telling you this is too good to be true. Mm. Until the bottom fell. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But is that kind of relationship, is that kind of commitment, is the fact that all of the faculty there were working artists, you know, they were really hard on exhibiting in Memphis and abroad and beyond Memphis. And they attended international conferences like I did, and I took students with me to those conferences. And so I think it's that kind of relationship of having a small place in which everybody was in one building to start with, and then after that in two buildings, but it never went beyond of having courses on different buildings. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, we were also close as a faculty because of it. Mm-hmm. I think that was really important in the connection that we have with the students. Also on how we could help each other. Mm. You know, like the ceramic teacher, Andrea, asking me what imprint making she could use on ceramics and how I can use surface design into pre-making, and this kind of interrelations, not just teaching, but how we taught and how we can help each other teaching with another faculty member. You start on one project and you get finishing another class. We made paper in one class, and then they came with that paper and they printed on that paper. Mm. That kind of things was truly special. Mm-hmm. And that's what I missed when I started teaching at the UM. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There were people that only met 2 years into me teaching courses over there because we were in the search committee together. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. See, I knew you mm-hmm. because you were there from the beginning, and before that I mm-hmm, knew you. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't, you know, mm-hmm. the usual thing, mm-hmm. having one building over here and another building over here. And
now, I'm curious, Maritza, who were some of the teachers, like you mentioned Leandra, who were some of the other teachers that you really sort of connected with there at MCA? And then what do you think it was about them that made you connect with them so hard?
Dolph.
Okay.
He's a sweet man. He's humble enough to realize that he's one among many instead of being the one among the many, you know, be the one. He was one among. And so I think the first collaboration I did in teaching was with him. And let me see who, Bob Reisling, even though that he was in the creative in the way that he taught his courses, I started admiring him because the way, you know, he was willing to take the students to these trips and take them to places, you know, to expose the students to draw. So they took the drawing classes to these striptease joints, you know, and who else? Tom Lee, you know, in the way that I did several review committees with him. So if it wasn't in teaching, it was on review committees. We gave each other a turn, you know, and I always marvel on the Tom's insight, you know, how quiet he could be. And then when he spoke, the whole, we all got quiet and listened. It wasn't just for the students, it was also for us. The way that he informed, the way I could help the students through the critique. And it wasn't about tearing them down. It was to see, who are you? What do you want to accomplish? And if you do not know that, how can I help you? And this may be something that you may be looking into. Or this is where you're at. Where do you, versus where do you think you're at? You know, it kind of gives it that feedback. It really transformed the way I did critique. My way during critique is to empower the students to run the critique with specific questions. Because what I found most of the time is that the students' intention is to either turn them down, the fellow students, or to like them so much in which they're not helpful at all. Mm. To think about the you and I instead of the artwork. The critique is not about them, it's about the work. And so they have a hard time saying the print, the image. Instead, it's, you should have done this, you did this, I like what you did in here, I like the, it's, how is that reflected on the work? So I do give them some specific. He said, you run, I do not talk until the end, because then everything was going to fall on me. Mm. That's what they're going to do. Mm. The easy way, lay back and let her talk. I won't talk until the end. I try not to repeat what they repeated, mm-hmm. but to assert, you know, this point and this point is, was very interesting and valid, but what about this and this and this? You know, so, and I learned that from Fred Burton. Fred Burton was the one who gave me the questions for his critiques. And then I elaborated it and changed them around printmaking. But the basics are the same. How the work covered the areas of composition. And, you know, composition in itself has many areas. How the work established the concept. How well it does it translate the concept. How the technique work in translating those concepts. It's about writing. If you don't write clearly, the reader will not understand what you're trying to say. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with visual arts. The correlation that art is not separate to life, that many of the canons that we choose to inform our lives is very similar to making art. How if you watch a cooking show, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. or if you watch this show that has to do with these people making, designing clothes and making clothes. It's the same thing. They have to have a concept. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You have to have a concept. You don't have to come with, today I want to draw plants and tomorrow I'm going to draw this and be all over the place. Because again, you lost. You get to look. Who are you? Mm. I'm on that. Okay, you want to draw a plant. What you want to say through that plant? How are you going to use the plant as a way of communicating something that goes beyond the literal idea of the plant? Mm-hmm. And by thinking that way, that means you can change that plant to whichever, whatever you need it to be able to say what you want to say. Mm-hmm. You can break molds, you can break rules. The plant doesn't have to be green. You make it blue, and automatically you asking the viewer, what is that plant blue? You know, it's just to change it, but first you need to realize that you don't have to be literal. You don't have to be expected. It's okay to ask yourself questions. We're so into, we have to have the answers. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If we don't have the answer for some reason, we show to others that we are somehow diminished in our capacities. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You have to start with questions. And it's okay to ask questions to yourself. So my question to the student is, what are you doing? Why are you doing it? How are you doing it? What are your choices among those three questions? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then another important one, what if? Mm-hmm. What if you change it this way? What if you pick this? How is that related to what you're trying to say? Mm-hmm. Is the image coming through with the idea? That's what you learn through the critiques. How does it come through to others? Mm-hmm. The idea that, well, my art is on the wall, and so it's not for me to explain without realizing, no, you're not explaining it. It's not to tell that's a plan and this is this. No, it's to explain, what are your motivations behind mm-hmm. that? And if your motivations are honest through the process, the people are going to get it. You know, they don't realize how you can manipulate the viewer into what is it that you want to say by being clear about your intentions in the way that you use the art system, the composition, the color, the forms, the shapes, as symbols instead of literals, how all that come across. Because of my years of experience, when I approach somebody viewing my work, you say, well, what is it that you get out of that, you know? And whatever they tell me is invariably on the route from their own point of view, but mm-hmm. it's still on the route. Mm-hmm. Because being humans, we all have very similar experiences. We enjoy things, we get sad about things, we get hungry about things, we feel fear, we feel success, we feel grave, we feel bad. Those are all common. That commonality coming from your own experience, and I feel like I'm just preaching to the choir in here.
No.
But that is...
To me, that's so great, Marissa. I mean, I love so many parts of that. I mean, one is sort of the thing that you were talking about with, you know, learning certain things from other teachers and listening to the way they talk. I mean, for me, I remember when I was teaching in the graduate program there at MCA, for me, one of the parts that I really enjoyed was sitting back and sort of watching, you know, whether it was you or Tom or Susan or whoever was in the critique with me, and sort of recognizing that y'all's connection to the student was obviously much greater than mine, sort of as an outsider, that you guys had a much closer connection to the student. And then also a really wonderful connection, almost like a kind of teamwork with one another, you know, and sort of knowing when to say what and to think about the student in that way. I mean, I really appreciate you talking about that. That felt really right. Now, one of the things that you mentioned was talking about being in the city and showing your work and having it out there, both in the city and then elsewhere. And so I'm curious, like, in terms of thinking about you, we've talked a lot about you and your relationship to MCA. How do you think about your relationship in terms of the city and then the ways maybe that the city has either shaped you or shaped your work? I'm curious about how you fit in or how you think about yourself as fitting in with Memphis.
But Memphis has definitely become a second home to me. Mm-hmm. From all the places I have been, this is the place I feel at home. It's regardless of the difference and that we may have politically, racially, and stuff like that, it's the city that has. This region had the most of an identity. Mm. You live in New York, and it's a cosmopolitan city. It's divided by, it's sometimes even divided street by street. And you had your groups or your cliques in areas and streets. And not in Memphis. You go to places in, I mean, there is a culture of the South that you do not experience in other places. So in that way, correlate of being from Puerto Rico. There's a culture in Puerto Rico. I mean, there's some traditions in Puerto Rico. There are traditions in here. So that has made me feel at home. Regardless. Also, the artist community in here, it has just grown to be an amazing community. So being part of a community is important to me. Having a family here beyond my husband and I, you know, it just has grown to in-laws and cousins and aunts and uncles and all that stuff, you know. So I feel natural by the community and at the same time of service because I cannot nature the community, you know, by helping my students, by helping my neighbors, by my helping neighbor me. I mean, it has become this symbiotic relationship. And so I'm very certain my art would not be the way it is in other place but Memphis. Memphis has given me the space to grow in many ways. And so that's how I feel connected to this community, you know. Not just the opportunity for me to grow, for the opportunity to grow other members in the community, starting by my students, and now starting by, and later on, by my immediate neighborhood and by the city, you know. So it's a pleasure of me. I mean, I had worked very closely in my studio with at least three people in my community talking about coming to work with me and me for them. The students have stopped by in the time of need. I tell them, hey, you want to finish this project? Come to my studio and let's work it out, you know, and telling him, okay, I'm going to bed. You can stay here until you're done. You know, that for me is happiness, you know, of telling them, you know, or people coming in to learn bookbinding and liner cuts and stuff like that, just people who want to take individual courses with me, or taking drawing, or taking whatever. So that has been coming, been developing through the years, and now it's getting to be very, now that I have more time on my own, is one of my goals to become a place of teaching. You know, and the opportunity for printmakers, because I know that printmaking is lacking in this city. Once the students graduate, they may not have a place to go. Or the there's another outfit that has a press, and they're doing a screen printing. Downstairs do some sort of commercial printmaking. The way I approach it is slightly different. It's more like a fine arts printmaking and more of self-development than to create a product. Mm-hmm. So I have my niche in here. I believe on that niche that I have in here. I believe on the need of the city for what I can offer beyond my teaching. And that is the point that I'm at, especially with my new space, which you have to visit. It's a gorgeous space.
Now, I'm curious. I mean, I love all of that, especially how you were talking about how you feel like you have a niche here. Now, I am also curious, you know, as somebody who has been here for a long time and who's seen people, you know, come to the city and seen their work sort of change, I'm curious, what do you think visually or conceptually you feel like the city has brought to your work, or maybe influenced your work in some way?
I believe that each artist in this city have taught me things in a way that I can approach things. And I'm thinking installation-wise, and thinking beyond printing something on paper that I did not think of before moving into the city. I have seen it in other cities, that approach. But, you know, like Tom Lee and the way he approached installing his work. Mm-hmm. The way that Sherry Reith did. The way that, what is all the installation artist, local artist, his name is here, but I cannot come up with. The way that Richard Liu does. The way that they insert social issues into it. They always been in my work, but more so in the past 10 years or so, because the way they have shown me how I can do it. The way that is relevant, and the way that it has always been there, that I can push in that direction even more so. So I felt that those are the things I'm taking.
To me, I mean, all of that sounds, again, really great. You know, it's so funny in my brain, like, sometimes I'll ask a question, you know, and I'll be like, oh, Maritza might say this, this, or this, you know. But I love how I'm always wrong. You know, it's like the same thing, like, with teaching, you know. Like, I'll tell my students, I'll be like, well, let's just do, you know, think about this. And then they'll come in and they'll just have something that I have never thought of. It's so much fun.
Yes, it is.
Now, let me think. Okay, so one of the things, too, that I'm super curious about, and I was talking with Lawrence Matthews about this the other day as we were leaving here. I was talking about how, like, when we were in art school, you know, like, I gravitated towards the, you know, the tragic young artists, you know, like Eva Hesse or, you know, Van Gogh or Jean-Michel Basquiat, you know, all the people that died in their 20s. And I really, part of my job, I think, as a teacher is to try and convince students that it's okay to get real old, and it's okay to be a grown-up, and it's okay to see what happens when you're in your 50s or 60s or 70s. I'm curious, as you are at this place in your life, I'm super interested in terms of how you think about your work now, because I think one of the things too that's really powerful for me is to see artists like you and Pinkney and Beth and Greeley, who I really think are making their best work right now.
Greeley is amazing. That was the other artist I was thinking about that. Okay. I could not get his name.
Okay.
You know, so what is your...
But I'm curious, what do you think? How are you thinking about yourself at this time in your life? Like, you know, you said that thing about your studio and how you want your studio to be this way. But I'm curious, how are you thinking about your work differently?
If it's not now, when?
I love it. Part of me just wants to turn everything off right now and just be like, that was it. We're all done. I'm done with my interview with Maritza.
Let's go to work.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's go and get a sandwich and then let's go to work. But now thinking about that, I love, again, that thing about it. If not now, when? I mean, I'm with you totally for sure. But especially because when I think about you and when I think about printmaking and I think about your process, you know, so much of it has to do with experience and so much of it has to do with knowing how things work. I mean, it seems like on a technical level, you know, you're also as good as you've ever been. And so I'm curious, how are you thinking about it in the studio these days?
I'm thinking in terms of what I want to, on how to be relevant. In terms of what's going on and the ways I can navigate that. Is for certain amount of years, the urgency of it is growing and growing. And that's what I'm thinking about.
Let's crack that open. What do you think? What are you thinking about when you say relevant?
There's nothing that I'm more afraid of, and I think many artists are, of stop being relevant. And relevant to me, it means being aware of being woke about what's going on and how it's affecting many people, including me. It's about lending my voice instead of shying away. It means also teaching the next generation, because I had to include education on that. Teaching others how important is your own voice. Because the way that you can say things, no one else will say it the same way. Each individual perspective is unique to that individual. Therefore, even if it's about the same issue, your perspective and the way that you approach that is going to inform in a different, even in the slightly different way, others.
Great. P.S. This is one of the things I'm really loving about this is me just sitting over here nodding. Like, I feel like last time when I was listening to the interview from before, the voice in my head was like, Hamlet, just get out of the way and just let Maritza talk, you know? And I'm so glad that I think this is my new rule. It's the rule where I try not to say anything at all, where I just sit over here and nod. I mean, to me, Maritza, I mean, one of the things too that I love, that thing that you said about was, was being relevant and being connected to students and teaching. Because, I mean, you know, we've talked about this a bunch of times. You know, you were like, well, once the new printmaker gets in there and everything's all settled, you know, I'll finally retire or whatever, you know. And it's like we're going to have to drag you away. But, and how great is that? And so, I mean, one of the things I really love about you is that you're sticking around and you're still teaching. For me, I honestly can't imagine a time when I'm not teaching. I'm curious, when you teach now, obviously you're thinking about it differently than you thought about it in the 1980s, you know, when you first got to Memphis. I'm curious, how are you thinking about it differently now?
It's as much teaching than learning from. And that for me is a gift. Everything I learn from my students. I don't know you, but my own experience about printmaking is there's a lot of troubleshooting. Mm-hmm. Not just technically, but in terms of come out with the idea, develop it into a concept, learning how to research, which is getting a little harder and harder because the students want to. Many students have a tendency to work from what they know. And so you have to push them into, okay, what about what you do not know? Mm-hmm. And then just seeing the process evolve into what they say, aha, it's just me being the witness of that. And just saying, gosh, I think that I'm going to learn of what you're doing. I think I'm going to approach it, my work. I think I need to consider that, but you just did. You know, it's and I'm with the journey, you know, more so than, you know, I can show them the tools, but I'm more interested in what they're going to do with those tools. And so the students, they're my teachers too. And you have to be ready to accept it, that part of the process is learning, you know, learning from them. You have to come to realize that you are master of none and a student of all. And so, and to impart that curiosity. And once that is established in how many you can reach in that way, that satisfaction, there's no price to that satisfaction.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause in part, we're talking about legacy. You know, in part, we're sort of talking about not just what we give to them, but like you were saying, what they give to us and how it isn't necessarily just like a one-way street, how we're constantly in this swirling vortex of information and how we're really sort of in it in this really beautiful sort of fulfilling way. And that thing about constantly learning, you know, I mean, I think about when I was younger, I have an uncle who's a radiologist. And I said, why did you want to be a radiologist? And he said, well, I never wanted to be bored. I knew I would never be bored. And I was like, that's a cool line. I'm going to use that line. But it's that way in the studio, and it's also that way in the classroom. Like, I never know what's going to happen. Now, shifting back, it is very rare that I do an interview with someone who has a huge show up right now. I'm curious, talk to me a little bit about the show that's up right now at Crosstown. I mean, I know that it's a huge show, so there's a lot to unpack there, but talk to me a little bit about that show.
That show, it was my way to deal an asset loss. And loss, not just on what I miss, but what I gain from it. It is my way to say, darn it, I'm not going to be beaten down. If not so much as the work in it, but my attitude of it. Because that work can, that exhibition can be called a retrospective. Mm-hmm, if you're going to be, if you're going to be very honest about it, I have worked in there from, I think, the 70s. It's what happened and that moment and that instant, not to me, but to the work and the space. Mm-hmm. It's my word to exercise something in something that some people may consider sad and depressing, and some people have been asking, how did you get up from that? Because I never went down. Mm. I decided that very same night, and I have a partner who is on the same wavelength. He was the one who told me, we are going to rebuild. And we started, I started the next day. He started the next day too. With me. Mm-hmm. I started the next day. And that is something else that I want to communicate to everyone, you know, because most tendency is to go down the drain with that. And one of the things I've realized, if I go down that way, I will not survive.
Now, to me, one of the things that's really great about you talking about it being like a retrospective, I'm super curious what are, and then also to be able to have all that work in one space is really powerful, I think, too, for the audience. But I'm curious, for you, seeing some of those pieces from the 1970s and some of those pieces from today, I'm curious, what are some things that you saw in those pieces when you saw them again, you know what I'm saying? Like seeing them 50 years later.
On that space.
Yeah, yeah,
on
yeah.
A space like yeah. That. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, yeah. I mean, once in a while you pull something and you say, boy, this is still, move me. And then some others you say, oh gosh, what I was thinking about. I was going just through the move when I was working on this. Mm-hmm. But you learn from everything. What I learned that there are constants in the work. There are ideas that is still working through it, maybe different, because I noticed how abstracted my work was, even though it has a lot of landscape on it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you noticed, but it was back then, it was a lot of landscape. It's still a lot of texture. It was a lot of color. The color has muted a little bit, you know, and this other sounds brought into it, like the figure. I didn't work on figure until, when did I start working with figure, with images, with portraits, with people? Ew, golly. It was not until maybe 2011? Mm. You know, and I was using the images of my daughter. You know, the idea of the altars came stronger. The idea of the spiritual is still relevant. I think now the idea of forces that you cannot control, but eventually you work with, is now in the newer pieces, mm-hmm. kind of redefining. You say, okay, this happened. Okay, I'm going to just turn it around.
Mm-hmm. Now, the show, like you were saying, is massive and it feels sort of like a retrospective. Is that one of those things that gives you momentum? Is that one of those things that really gets you revved up and gets you ready to get back in the studio?
Yes. Also, that I'm doing, I did some installations based on my own experience. I always wondered how people create these massive, incredible installations. And Richard is pretty good about putting his political and sense on his installations. So I always remember this say, writer, write about what you know. The installations are, they're not as political as experiencing, you know, like this is the way I hung my prints to dry when I brought them out of the flat fires and many of them were wet or smoke or whatever. And so that is the way they're going to hang, you know. So the slides, which I don't know if you have seen the slideshow, it's now up. The slideshow for me was hard to see. But then I saw everything else. The little installations about my tools and my burn brushes and stuff like that. I wanted it to be beautiful. I wanted it to be intentionally thought through as a composition. It's not so much about the pieces in there, the dark brushes, it's about how they were put together. A little bit the way it was in my studio, and a little bit in ways that you do not see those things, like putting the brushes, like it was a still life. I was thinking about still lifes. The burned out electrical box. I saw that. You know, it took me a while to see what I could do with that. I mean, they were put away. And then when I took it back, John was insistent, Marixa, you need to place that as part of the show. But then I was thinking, how? And so I saw the box and I said, oh my goodness, look at these little spaces in here. Prints come through it. And not just any prints, the one with rocks. You know, and the rocks were red. You know, so it's the melted buttons, and then you had these little rocks popping up. I don't know what those wrecks. I have a box full of rocks that I used to draw from, and that is what those etchings came from. I don't know where that went. They disappear. You know, but I had the prints. I have books that I had never seen. That they're gone, definitely gone. The two of them that they're in the very tall base is two of them, and those were the latest books I have put together. One of them was in the process to have finished. Well, now I had to, the whole idea had to be rethought. And so it's, it's just reviving everything that I saw there, and what am I going to do? What I'm going to revise, because I really like them, but how? How am I going to update them? And I have some ideas. I've been talking to you. I just keep thinking about it. I dream about it. I make a lot of prints. I'm going to be thinking about it. I dream about it. I get up and it's okay. I know what I'm going to do. I don't know if that happens to you. Yeah. When you have, even happened to me when I have a student with a particular problem. I dream about it and I say, okay, come with me. I dream about your problem and I think this is what we're going to do. You know, so I respect those. I sketch also a lot on my head. You know, I'm building stuff. I'm building tables. I'm doing my own screen printing frames. And I bought a whole bunch of tools. you know, an electrical staple so I can build my own stretches, you know, instead of buying it. So I'm the people at Lowe's, they know me. I always gravitate to the wood section and say, okay, I need this 4x8. I need to be cut it this way. I need glue to do this. I need the nails. I need the circular saw. I have a circular saw that even my husband is afraid of. That thing is a monster, you know. And so I just gone to the studio in terms now about what am I going to build and what am I going to do. I just gave a workshop at the University of Mississippi last week with Kalina. You know Kalina? Mm-hmm. She's an amazing printmaker. She wanted me to do a screen printing. So I went ahead, did my own screen, because this screen has to be built in a certain way. I cannot buy it. So I took it, and I was there around 1:30. We do not leave until 8 o'clock in the evening. And then I took the stuff with me, brought the prints with me. I said, Kalina, I'm going to finish them in my studio, and then I'm going to send to you some of the prints. So that's the exchange. It was such an amazing place. Being a visiting artist is a lot of fun, too. They treat you well. You had the attention of all these people. It's an ego booster. And so I had the most amazing assistant, you know, and so we printed color after color, and then I said, I think I'm going to stay and print one more color. I said, okay, we're bringing pizza, you know, so because it was already around 7 o'clock when I decided, I think I want to print one more color, you know. Troubleshoot to some problems, share it with the students. The student asked lots of questions. I talked while I was working. So it was a lot of fun. So I had that print unfinished on one of my tables. I'm building another table to go over another table. So put stuff in. So I'm still organizing and building and printing. You know, put in little touches, like they hung stuff on the walls. You know, put in some flowers that Mary Jo made for me. So, okay, these flowers are going to be in the entrance of this door. You know, putting stuff on it, you're making the space a little less sterile and white because it's all white. And started putting prints up, which I did not have in the old studio. Mm. You know, so I'm doing that now, and I'm teaching my granddaughter how to put wire on this frame and stuff like that. So this afternoon I'm gonna teach her, okay, I'm building this table, look what I did in here, using the glue and then the nails, and this goes on the front and this opening. So teaching her about not just design, but purpose within the design. Because, you know, it's a rule of mine that purpose and intention drive the work. So that's what I'm doing. Did I answer your question?
You sure did. That was perfect. Perfect timing and everything. Well, thank you for joining me. And now let's go back to work.
Yes.
And this is the second interview, this was the second interview with Maritza Davila. This interview was recorded on March 1st, 2025. Please join us next week with another interview. Until then, thank you for listening.